Accession number 27460, reel 24.
Mr. Wilkes, reel 24. You're in this basically a static position at this moment in time.
Yes.
And how long were you there?
We were there quite a while, actually. The 11th East Africans were making good progress, and I think we were managing, with the small amount of shells we had, to keep them supported. And by now, we'd had a man flown out to go and get parts, axle shafts and the like for our gun tractors, and so the gun tractors were all now back with us. We did move on. Now, the 11th East Africans had a deadline set for them. They had to be to Kaleba for Christmas Day, and they were pushing on because they had been told that when they got to Kaleba they were going to be pulled out for a rest, and they were damn good soldiers. So we moved on from one position to another, and then I remember on one occasion, as we were pulling into one position, one of the chaps out of my regiment, he rushed up to my vehicle and said, John Bassant, who was a friend of mine, trained to be a bank manager, he said, he's in the same position here, but he's just going out. He said, he's looking for you before he goes. And I just travelled a bit further into the position, and sure enough, I met John, and he was going out on a forward observation post. Regrettably, that was the last I ever saw of him, because by he'd been on forward observation, he'd got cerebral malaria and amoebic dysentery, and by they got him evacuated, it was too late and he died.
Do you think that was in his mind when he was wanting to see you before he went? Did he have some premonition, do you feel?
He might have had.
Didn't come across this with people, the premonition.
No, but we shook hands and that, and you know, and because we'd been very friendly when we were in South India. So that was that.
So Christmas, did they get to Kaleba by Christmas Day?
Oh, they did better than that, or a lot better. And this is where the trouble started. I think, if my memory serves me right, I think we got to Kaleba for the 9th of December. And, of course, the 11th East Africans then wanted to come home. They didn't want to fight anymore. And I have heard it said that some of them actually mutinied. And I understand a few shells were dropped behind them, but I couldn't vouch for that. But their general, General Fuchs, he must have talked them back and said, your contract is to fight till Christmas Day. And so we had to push on. And so we had to wait there for a little while till the heavy bridging equipment came up. But of course, they'd expected to bring it up for Christmas Day, but when they saw how quick the advance was going, they had started bringing it up quicker. And we got the bridge across the Chindwin, and we would go over.
Was that an objective which was in your mind? You know, the Chindwin, was it a big objective?
Oh, yes.
To reach and get over it?
Yes. And push across the Chindwin. And then you had the Burma plane in front of you, and you were pushing.
So you were leaving the jungle, in effect, were you?
Oh, yes. But you would shortly after crossing the Chindwin. The Chindwin was still in the thick jungle.
Was it an opposed crossing, did you know?
it had been. We didn't see much of it, but anyway, they built the Bailey Bridge. Now, there were a couple of things happened while we were waiting to cross. The sad one was our regimental quartermaster died in his sleep.
What was his name again?
That's gone now.
I think we've got it, actually.
Yes, I think we have. I'm sorry about that. Never mind. Whilst we were waiting there for the bridge to be built, we'd got word that piston rings that fitted the Ford V8 engine could be fitted with a little bit of engineering into the Jeeps, and that would prolong the life of the engines. And so our MT officer came to me and said, "What do you think?" I said, "Get me some rings and I'll do it," because I didn't expect to have to do a job like that so far forward. I think my time was limited to about 1 hour, but I did much bigger jobs than that. Anyway, he got me the rings and the gaskets and things, and I set to. I tipped the Jeep on its side, took the battery off, and took the oil out and everything, took the cylinder head and the sump off, drew the pistons out. The valves were in a terrible state, and I managed to. Well, I didn't have any machinery for dealing with the valves, but what I did, I fastened my breast drill into my vise, and I put each valve in turn into the chuck, and I got the driver to crank the breast drill round, and with a file I refaced the valves, all eight of them.
What exactly is a breast drill?
The breast drill is one of these that you wind round and round like that.
The handle on you?
Yes.
So it was hand-turned?
Yes. It mounted against your breast to give you the pressure, and a handle on the side, and you wound the wheel. So the driver would crank this round, and I got the valves all done. I had everything ready for going in. I'd got the pistons ready with the rings on. And lo and behold, the Japanese had decided to try and bomb the bridge, and we were very close to the bridge. And a stray bomb landed very close to us. And I had all the parts on the mudguard of the Jeep. And of course, when the bomb landed, it really shook the Jeep, and the bits and pieces went tumbling down. Anyway, the drivers all helped, and we got the bits gathered together, and we got the Jeep assembled. And next day, it drove across the bridge.
And I think you mentioned that by now spare parts were coming through for the tractors and the bigger vehicles.
For the gun tractors, we'd got our things, but it was just a temporary situation.
Did you have a team of people working under you?
No. I worked on my own. I was headquarters. I worked on my own, and if I needed any help, then I had to go to our light aid detachment, which were Remies.
And they were behind you, at
yes.
some point?
Yes. Actually, they used to usually stay up with headquarters, but we, at the position where the junction was, they were further back because they couldn't get that far. They were having problems with their vehicles, getting them through the jungle. They had a Big Mac recovery vehicle, and it was a six-wheeler, but it didn't drive on the front wheels, and consequently, when it got in the soft mud, the wheels used to splay out and cause it to stick. So they had to do all sorts to keep it going.
So in a way, you had to turn your hand to all kinds of innovative devices to
yes, all the time.
Answer a problem, to work on
yeah.
a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a particular designation? Did you have a particular title for your role? Corporal mechanic or whatever it was?
I was a bombardier vehicle mechanic.
And a great deal from what you've been saying, you're picking up as you went along.
Yes. I learnt an awful lot. It was the best education I could have got.
And a position in the regiment that was, in a way, pretty unique. You know, no one could say you were doing anything right or wrong because you were the expert.
Supposed to be.
Are we nearing Christmas at this time?
Yes.
So I was going to ask you what happened, you know, obviously, when you get to Christmas, what you do?
We'll get across the Chindwin, and we were pushing on with the 11th East Africans, and we got some 30 miles or so the other side of the Chindwin. When we first crossed the Chindwin, we saw this place, Shwe Gin. It was where all the guns and vehicles had been dumped on the retreat in 1942. It was a pathetic sight. Anyway, we pushed on, and we came to a halt on the 22nd of December. And we dug in, and we were told we were going to be there a day or two. So we dug in. Now, on the morning of the 23rd, before stand to, I heard my name being called. Not very loudly, but in a loud whisper, if you know what I mean. And it was the second in command of our regiment. And he had been back down the line to collect all the Christmas fare. And so he was calling my name. He wanted me to go back with him. The vehicle that he was in, which was a pool transport vehicle, which wasn't really my concern, he wanted me to go back beyond the Chindwin, to the west side of the Chindwin, to get it repaired, take another vehicle so they could offload all the Christmas fare, and he would bring it on. I would then bring that other vehicle on. And he said, and get hold of Coates, who was the pool transport fitter forward. He was the man that travelled with the regimental headquarters for the pool vehicles. He said, one of their other vehicles is broken down as well. So he said, you can drop him off. Well, it was notorious for breaking down. No one had been able to solve the problem on it.
Pool vehicles, this was obviously, as you say, a pool of vehicles which were close enough to be drawn on if you had problems with your own. Is that?
No. Sorry. The pool transport was formulated from the cutting down of our normal number of vehicles. Now, we used to have 36 three-tonners in the regiment prior to going into Burma. They only had room to manage 18. So what they did, each battery had to share them. Each battery and headquarters had to share. There was a pool transport fitter, and then if the vehicles were with the battery and one of them broke down and the pool fitter with the battery couldn't deal with it, he had to have help from the others. And so
his task was to look after those vehicles.
Yes.
As against the ones that you were looking at.
That's right. So when pool vehicles came forward, if one of them was in trouble, he went to the pool fitter. If he was already busy on one, then I looked at it. It was never a case of yours and mine. We always helped each other. Mind you, he never helped on mine because he never had time. Anyway, we set off back down with the second in command in one three-tonner. And when we got to this one that was notorious for breaking down, it was the one and only Ford V8 that we had. Now, the history of that vehicle was that it had developed a very bad misfire not long after coming to us. No one could solve the problem. It had gone back to our Rennie section. They couldn't find it. They sent it back to second line workshops. They couldn't solve it. They put a new engine into it and it came back the same as it went, with a note on only half load it in future. So that was it. So As we were travelling down the road, I said to Coates, I said, well, I'll leave you with L7. Do what you can with it. And then and wait for me. I said, I'll come up with the other wagon. So, as I anticipated, the wagon that had broken down beside the Chindwin, it had water problems. So, by I'd got all the water cleaned out of the systems, they'd transferred most of the load. So anyway, the second in command said he would still transfer the rest, and he would take that vehicle on his own. He said, I'm going down the river on a raft. It would save time. So couldn't weigh this one up at all. Anyway, we once he'd gone, I jumped into the vehicle with the driver, and we set off, crossed the Chindwin again. That's three times across the Chin, and didn't travel far, and saw the military police. They stopped us. And where do you think you're going? And I said, well, and I told him. And he said, how far up the road is this other vehicle? Oh, I said, a mile, maybe a mile and a half, something like that. And he said, OK, but don't go any further, because the engineers are going to be blasting the road open during the day to widen it. So I said, righto. So away I went, and as I travelled along, I saw a second line workshops as I travelled along the road. So when I got up to L7, Coates had got the vehicle going, and it had been the cookhouse wagon, and it was towing a water trailer with 150 gallons of water in it. Oh, we were in seventh heaven. Breakfast was ready. There was lots of food left on. And so I soon took the wind out of Coates' sails, because I told him that we were going to be stuck there for the rest of the day. Oh, he says, that's ideal. We can get some washing done and some letters written. I said, we're going to try and solve this problem first. And he said, no, we're not. He said, we're going to do what I say. I said, we're not. And I pulled rank on him. And I said, we're going to solve it. And so after breakfast, I went to it. Now, this was the very first time I'd looked at this vehicle at all. And I went to it and I removed the distributor cap, which saw it looked as though there'd been tracking in the cap. I didn't think it was bad enough to cause the problem. I thought, but what I'll do, I'll go back to this workshops and see if they have a new cap for it. They hadn't, but they had a better one than the one that was on, and it proved to be no better. So then I took the distributor off and I studied it and tried it and did all sorts, and I'd had it off two or three times, and I had no enthusiasm from Coates whatsoever. I was just wasting my blubbing time. And I'm sitting there just looking, and I suddenly spotted what the problem was. And I said to him, I said, Busty, he was always known as Busty Coates. I said, Busty, I said, I think I've found it. He said, you're kidding. And I showed him. I said, who the hell could have seen that? So I did what had to be done, put the distributor back on the vehicle, timed it up, started up, beautiful, eight cylinders, oh, beautiful after that. So then we had to wait until night. And so we'd got our washing done, we got our letters written, and we had our evening meal. And during this, as it was getting towards 6 o'clock, the military police arrived and said, now, there'll be a convoy coming down. You can't move till they've come down. He said, so it might be quite late when they finish coming. But he said, don't make a move until you get the all clear. So, right, we'll do as we're told. So it was getting dark, and it was a long time since we'd had our evening meal. We were feeling ready for a cup of tea. So we thought we'd make a brew up. And the method of brewing up was, we had a part of a petrol can that we were to put on two sticks wedged into the mountainside. Underneath that, we'd put an old mess tin with some sand in it, pour some petrol in it, and set fire to it. And so we did this. We'd no sooner got the damn fire going than the Japanese came over to bomb the bridge. Now, where we were, we were high up above the bridge. When you came off the bridge, you sort of circled round to your left and then worked away round to the right till you came right up and you were looking straight off the precipice edge down onto the end of the bridge. And of course, they were aiming there, weren't they? And we quickly put the fire out. So they cleared off. All was quiet. And we lit up again. And they came back again. And this time they dropped a bomb in close proximity, which demolished part of the hillside and buried our water. So we had to dig that out and wash the can out and start from scratch again.
Where do you shelter in such conditions like that?
Just to cover wherever you could on that particular occasion.
Not under lorries or anything like that?
Oh, no. No, just close to... You see, the hillside was coming down, so we were against the hillside, and which had proved it wasn't the best of places because that bomb had dropped near enough, I don't know just exactly where, but it caused the hillside to disintegrate and wash our tea out. So then we would have another attempt, and I said to the chaps, I said, now if the bloody Japs come back this time, I said, the fire stays on and we get that cup of tea reasoning on. And they came and we left the fire on and we didn't put it out. But then what did happen? The fire had burnt through one of the sticks that was holding the tin and it tipped out. So I've always said that was the most begrudged cup of tea I've ever had. But we did get a cup of tea at the finish up. And so eventually we got the opportunity to move on. And it was 2:30 in the morning when we got back to the camp, driving without lights through treacherous conditions, over diversions where bridges were down and everything. And we took it in turns to take the lead vehicle, to be the lead vehicle. And of course this L7 was running like a Trojan now, it was beautiful. And I was at the wheel at the time when we finally got to our position. And the RSM was waiting to greet us. And he says, and where the hell do you think you lot have been all day? And I said, we'd been held up, the police wouldn't let us through because... Oh, and I said, so we put our time to good advantage. I said, I've managed to fix this. And I'd just give it a blip on the throttle. He said, you're a bloody wonder. He says, I'll personally bring you a cup of tea in the morning. He says, because we're celebrating Christmas Day today, which was the 24th.
And how did those celebrations go? What happened to your...
Well, thereby... lies a story. I got my cup of tea brought by the Sergeant Major, as good as his word, and we had rigged up a table. I think a lot of the produce was tinned. Every man was issued with 2 bottles of beer, which I didn't drink, so it was left on the table for anyone that wanted it. And we had a nice Christmas dinner as such. And weapons were stacked. We didn't carry our weapons. We stacked them at various points on the position so we could grab them at a minute's notice if we had to. So the reason we were celebrating Christmas Day on Christmas Eve was because we were going to move through the jungle Christmas night. And we weren't looking forward to that after what we'd heard. because the column that had moved the night before had been badly ambushed and beaten up.
Was it a moment in time when you, Christmas, when your thoughts turned to home and all of you, of course?
Yes. Well, you see, I had just got that lovely Christmas card from my wife, which I have to this day. And, yes, I did think a lot about home.
Was there a religious service from the Padre? Was that available to you?
If there was, I didn't know anything about it. No.
And you didn't get together for little Christmas carols or anything?
No,
like that,
No. So, Christmas Day didn't go without an event. One of the drivers, one of the AC drivers, he was the brother of the regimental quartermaster sergeant. And his brother, of course, with the death of the quartermaster, was in line to be promoted to lieutenant quartermaster. And this stupid character, they were both sort of boxers. The beer he'd had gone to his head, and he knocked the neck off one bottle and attacked a sergeant major and plunged the broken bottle right to the bone into his top half of his arm. And, of course, he was escorted back to his wagon, and as he was climbing up into it, someone hit him on the side of the head with the rifle butt and dropped him. He was thrown in the ditch. And he got the respect he commanded, which was everyone to go and urinate on him. And he stayed there till he could be put.
Was it Colonel Soames still in command?
Colonel Soames, yes.
And you mentioned the two IC. What was his name?
I cannot remember it now. It's gone. One day it might come back to me.
And the gentleman who was due to take over as quartermaster, the RQMS. Can you recall his name again? I think we have it.
Bills.
Bills. We have it much earlier, but it's...
That's right, yes, Bills. And it was his brother that was the driver of the AC.